From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
A new study suggests that booming hatchery populations could increase the risk of salmon suffocation in rivers and streams across southeast Alaska. As conditions get hotter and drier due to climate change, scientists believe hatchery strays could create overcrowded, smothering conditions and put wild salmon at risk. KTOO's Anna Canny has the story.
In 2013, researcher Chris Sargent was doing some routine water quality monitoring in Sitka's Indian River when he noticed the oxygen levels in the water were unusually low.
Pretty much lethal, getting close to zero.
Fish started dying off, and many of them were hatchery-raised pinks. Sargent developed a hypothesis.
Too many salmon breathing too much oxygen, and it's unnaturally high population because of these stray hatchery fish.
A new study by Sargent and his research team suggests that across southeast Alaska, straying hatchery salmon could put pressure on wild salmon habitat that's already vulnerable due to climate change. The water in rivers and streams has dissolved oxygen in it, which salmon and other fish breathe through their gills. When those fish can't get enough oxygen, it's known as hypoxia. It can suffocate spawning salmon, or it can slow them down on their trip upstream.
They may not make the spawning grounds in time or have enough time to spawn. So there's a lot of really subtle effects in addition to just massive die-offs that might happen.
Since the 70s, hatchery production across Alaska has grown, especially for pink and chum salmon. Hundreds of millions of fish are released each year. They're supposed to return to their hatchery when they spawn, but they commonly stray into wild streams. According to the study's authors, that puts wild salmon at a higher risk of hypoxia. Many southeast rivers and streams already face low oxygen due to human-caused climate change. Hotter water holds less oxygen, and when warming temperatures come along with drought, that makes things even worse, because an ideal salmon habitat is rough and fast-flowing. That kind of water is oxygen-rich.
The more the water tumbles and foams, the more opportunity it has to exchange with the atmosphere. So that tumbling motion of the water is basically injecting oxygen.
Climate change could slow stream flows by bringing drought to southeast Alaska. Extreme rainstorms may be punctuated by longer dry periods, especially in the summer. And declining mountain snowpack could cause drought too. Ryan Belmore is a U.S. Forest Service researcher who co-authored the study. He said, abundant winter snow feeds watersheds as it melts gradually throughout the spring and summer. Without it, salmon streams could dry up and slow down in the summer heat.
We're moving towards a condition where more of our watersheds are likely going to be more prone to this.
According to the study, more than 10,000 miles of southeast salmon streams are primed for hypoxia, which means those cramped conditions could strangle even more wild salmon. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, providing twice weekly service to Alaska's Emerald Isle.
For decades, chum and king salmon runs on the Yukon River have become more unpredictable. And now both species are in historic collapses. That's jeopardized the health and livelihoods of Alaskans along the river. But it's not just a problem for Alaskans. Across the border, Canadian communities are also missing those fish. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George explains how both countries depend on each other to conserve this vital resource.
The Yukon River covers a lot of ground on its nearly 2,000-mile journey to the sea. The river's headwaters are in British Columbia, and from there it winds north through the Yukon, crosses the border near Eagle, and flows all the way across interior Alaska until it finally reaches the Bering Sea. And for as long as people can remember, king salmon fed everyone along its course.
For most of our lives, it was king salmon that was the majority of our diet and what we traded and what we processed.
That's Rhonda Pitka, chief of the village of Beaver in the Upper Yukon Flats. Pitka remembers busy summers as a child with her family at their fish camp about 10 miles outside the village, helping her grandmother catch and process fish. But today, she can't continue that tradition. In the last 4 years, king and chum runs have dropped so low, managers have all but closed subsistence fishing. It's challenging for families to get enough food just to last the winter, Pitka says, and salmon is missing from local traditions.
This summer has been pretty rough because we had a couple of deaths in Stevens Village. That's a village that's really close to Beaver. And, you know, we didn't have fish to pass out at the potlatch.
It's changing life on the Yukon, and not just in Alaska. Communities along the Upper Yukon, stretching deep into Canada, have borne the brunt of the salmon collapse, in part because only a fraction of the fish make it that far. Some Canadian First Nations have restricted fishing for decades. Pitka serves on the Yukon River Panel, a body of representatives from both Alaska and Canada that advises managers on both sides of the river.
You know, our Canadian counterparts haven't fished for at least 20 years, if not longer. And that's a tragedy all in itself. It's been really difficult. It's been really tense.
She says it's been a challenge to discuss resource allocation for a river that's not actually meeting anyone's subsistence needs. The panel was established by the Yukon River Salmon Agreement, a treaty that the U.S. and Canada signed in the early 2000s to make sure people on both sides of the river are able to fish. John Linderman is the U.S. co-chair. He says as part of that agreement, Alaska committed to making sure a certain number of fish cross into Canada.
Each country has its own responsibilities under the treaty agreement. For Alaska, one of our most important responsibilities is to annually provide to the Canadian border so that it goes into Canada, the escapement goal and the Canadian harvest share.
Escapement goal and harvest share. That means enough fish make it back to their spawning grounds to ensure a healthy salmon population, and in better years, enough fish on top of that to allow a fair harvest. Holly Carroll is the Alaska Subsistence Fisheries Manager for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. She says the treaty can sound like a burden for Alaskans, especially during the last 4 years when managers have heavily restricted subsistence fishing. But she says that's the wrong way to look at it.
People will say, just let us fish. I don't take more than I need. My family does not take more than I need. And every family will tell you that. And they mean it and they are honest. But here's the problem. When our runs are too small to meet everyone's needs, we have to close.
Lately, there aren't enough salmon returning to the river to ensure healthy runs in the future. And that means everyone on the river, Alaskan and Canadian, has to step back. The treaty keeps both sides working together to protect the salmon. But that doesn't mean it's easy, says Rhonda Pitka from Beaver. She recalled the potlatch after the recent deaths in Stevens Village.
This last week was so hard to see families not have salmon to give out at potlatch. You know, there should have been salmon on everybody's plate. They should have been able to give salmon out to visitors that were leaving. Like that's the cultural connection that we're missing right now, is the ability to share and to feed our families our cultural foods.
Right now, that's a pain that's felt on both sides of the border. In Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
The National Marine Fisheries Service recently closed its comment period on their proposal to rewrite the implementing guidelines for three of the national standards for the Magnuson-Stevens Act, which is the federal law that regulates all U.S. fisheries. The new guidelines are meant to account for two big changes. The first is a warming environment that has caught managers flat-footed in some cases, like Pacific cod and Bering Sea crab. The second is a new federal policy that emphasizes equity, especially in formerly underrepresented communities. The comments broke along two lines, generally those submitted by institutions and the industry advocates who feel well served by those institutions oppose any changes. Individuals and local small boat fishermen who feel less well represented in the process call the revisions long overdue. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is opposed to the changes, writing that the current guidelines, quote, provide a suitable level of guidance, close quote. The North Pacific Fishery Management Council agrees, saying the existing guidelines provide an appropriate level of guidance and warning that new guidelines might, quote, undermine the flexibility and adaptability of the management process, close quote. In other words, we already have plenty of guidelines and more will just slow us down. Industry groups like the Pacific Seafood Processors Association agreed, saying, quote, existing guidelines continue to be appropriate, close quote. But groups representing non-trawl fishermen tended to support the revisions. The Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association said, quote, ALFA strongly supports revising the guidelines to ensure federal fisheries management meets the challenge of climate change while equitably allocating fishery resources, providing for the sustained participation of fishery-dependent communities, and minimizing bycatch. At first, the comments just trickled in. That changed as the deadline loomed. Of the 247 total comments, 188 were received in the final 3 days, mostly from individuals. They ranged from, quote, get off your duffs and start doing something about the waste of our fish, close quote, to long, thoughtful essays. If you threw a dart at them, you would probably hit the word bycatch. The rush of comments at the end were overwhelmingly in favor of the revisions, despite the stance of their regulatory bodies. The ball is now in NIMP's court. We'll see what they hit back.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.